you and I, our nature, yes, we're extremely intelligent. We have a frontal cortex and a limbic system, and we have a data processing faculty that's very smart. But you cannot deny, my friends, you cannot deny that we are a product of nature itself. And so when I look at what you're saying, this resiliency comes up for me, because look at a tree in nature. It bends, but it doesn't break.
Your mind can be your most valuable asset or your biggest liability, and you get to choose. This is the Building Psychological Strength podcast, where we explore ways to build resilience, build confidence, and make our minds work in our favor. We draw from the fields of psychology and life design to help us intentionally create a rock-solid mindset upon which a vibrant life experience can be built. My name is April Seifert. I'm a psychologist, a life design strategist, and co-founder of Peak Mind, the Center for Psychological Strength. Each week, I'll introduce you to an expert, a concept, a technique, or a hands-on practice that will help you build psychological strength in your own life. These are the tools to help you thrive. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Building Psychological Strength podcast. My name is April Seifert and I'm your host. Today, we are speaking with the incredible Josh Trent. Josh is the founder of Wellness Force Media and host of the top-ranked iTunes podcast, Wellness Force Radio. Josh has spent the past 16 years as a researcher, trainer, and facilitator, discovering the physical and emotional intelligence for humans to thrive in our modern world. After publishing over 300 high-level interviews with some of the most respected minds in the health, wellness, and self-help industries, Josh has been spotlighted in so many major wellness media outlets. He holds a CES certification from the National Academy of Sports Medicine and is the creator of the Breathe Stress Management and Wellness Program, supporting women and men with sustainable solutions to meet the demands of our modern world through breathwork and the seven pillars of well-being. Friends, this interview is jam-packed. I don't remember the last interview I did where we hit so many incredible, valuable topics that impact us on a day-to-day basis. And not only that, but where there was so much tangible, hands-on, go do it right now and your life will change type of information. And just direction about how you can move forward and actually put all of this information to use. One of the things you will quickly learn about Josh is that he's a big proponent of learning, but he is an even bigger proponent of embodying that intelligence. And by that, he means showing up in the world, doing the work, putting it to use, and actually making it happen in your own life. In this interview, we talk about, as I mentioned, so many topics. We talk about intelligence and how Josh defines it. We talk about the spotlight effect and imposter syndrome. We hit on emotional resilience, on gratitude, on the negativity bias, on decision fatigue, and an amazing exercise that Josh shared with us called an emotional inventory that we suggest you do once a month in a process of life design to iterate toward a better feeling, more aligned life day to day. This interview is absolutely incredible. We are so thrilled to be partnering with Josh for this week's podcast episode, and I can't wait for you all to meet him. But before we dive into that interview, I have to let you know about one thing. Right now, as in today, for just a few more days, Peak Mind has opened up the Peak Mind membership. We don't do this very often, but we did it because we are accepting new members. And not only that, but we've released our first full-length online course focused on finding and eliminating your own self-limiting beliefs. Here's the even sweeter part of the deal. If you're interested in working on your self-limiting beliefs, you absolutely could purchase this course. We have it for sale on our website. However, for a limited time, while the membership is open, you can actually get this course for free. It's actually included in the Peak Mind membership. So if you are on the fence about becoming a Peak Mind member, friends, this is the time to take the plunge and to do it, because we're offering this course absolutely free, included in your membership. It's an incredible value. We're so excited about this course. I went back through the content and I was like shocked and so excited because you know how you put something out there and you start to doubt whether it's good and you start to doubt whether you're actually good enough? I'm not immune to those thoughts. I went back through it and I'm like, this is life-changing. I can't wait for people to see it. So I had to tell you about it before we dive into this week's interview. All right, let's go meet Josh Trent and hear about his incredible background and the amazing value he has to share with us this week. Josh, I am so excited to have you on this episode of Building Psych Strength because your background overlaps with everything that we're trying to do within Peak Mind so well. So welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is going to be great.
It's going to be so much fun because I love talking to fellow smart people, fellow people who love podcasting as much as I do. I'm sure we'll get into your show and the awesome things you're doing there. And also people who see the connection between the overlap of both physical strength and mental strength and other areas and how it really is an integrated holistic view of wellness. So I'm just pumped to talk about all the fun things that you've got going on.
There's a lot of fun things. This exploration, this discovery that we're all doing, where we realize, gosh, we can gather a bunch of information, but what do we actually do with that information? So I'm excited to talk about that too.
Totally. Okay. So before we hopped on to record, you gave me this amazing overview, like that just summed up beautifully your background and expertise. You really focus on three main areas of wellness. Can you dive into that and just give us a quick overview?
Yeah. If we were to look at my life discovery path, and I think really all of ours, if we look deep enough, it is this nexus point, you know, this Venn diagram of real intelligence. And the intelligence is our awareness and understanding and our ability to embody three things. It's emotional, it's physical, and it's spiritual. All three of those categories are very unique when it comes to human beings living their life well. So my sweet spot and what I really am basing my entire life upon and with Wellness Force is how do we actually take all this intelligence from those three areas and how do we gather the right information? How do we apply and test? And then lastly, what we're all really working on is how do we embody this intelligence? Because, you know, knowing without doing is the same thing as not knowing.
I love that so much. There's so many places just in that quick little snippet that I'm just so excited to dive into. A lot of people think about those three areas that you mentioned as very separate. And we encounter this too in Peak Mind. We don't dive as much into the spirituality side of things, but minimally within physical and mental health, people don't realize the overlap between those areas and how truly integrated they are. Do you find that within your work as well?
I do. I think in the 3D world, and I say 3D because I do believe that there is different quantum elements that integrate with our life. I do believe there's different dimensions. And so with that spiritual information, I know that here in the 3D world, we're very focused on the logical mind. Science likes to have a linear approach to research, and we like to bucket and silo things as if nothing's connected. But if you look at the laws of nature and how we integrate in nature, everything's connected and it always has been.
Absolutely. And you also made a really interesting distinction between the difference between knowing something and also doing it and embodying it. Can we talk about that a little bit? Because I think at least within the space that we operate, I see people, you know, buying all the books, doing all the things, right? Reading all the things, consuming all the YouTube content and you know, trying to consume so much. And that's wonderful, right? There's amazing information out there. It is a thrilling time that you have access to, I mean, everything that we know as a species on your phone, right? This is incredible. But you made the point that that doesn't do you any good unless you actually show up and do something with it and embody that. Yeah. Can you just dive in there a little bit?
Yeah. So I think all of us from a very early age, we are trained by our parents who were trained by their parents And if you look at the work of Alan Watts, it's all retch and no vomit, to give an interesting metaphor, because everyone is taught a certain way of being that if you have the information, if you have the PDF, if you have the degree, if you have the certificate, if you've, quote, gathered the right information, then all of a sudden that's going to equal embodiment. And this is like cannot be further from the truth, because true embodiment of information and intelligence only happens when there's a proper applying phase and a testing phase. That's where embodiment grows roots, just like a plant grows roots in nature. We grow roots in understanding, and we only grow those roots if we feed and water our own intelligence. So all of us get to go through many cycles of getting knocked down, getting back up, understanding, realizing that our understanding was wrong, you know, and going through multiple phases of discovery where at the end of it all, we just get stronger because we become more intelligent. And I'll tell you, intelligence is not how smart you are. Intelligence is your ability to do all of these three things, the gathering, the applying, the embodiment, with a child's heart, with an open heart and an open mind. And this is really a mirror of emotional resilience. You know, how do we be an adult in this world, have a child's heart, and really have the mind of a warrior? Because the world is not an easy place for us sometimes.
Here's something that I think is interesting. You're talking about testing, right? And I love that. One of my biggest passions in doing this work is something that I call life design. So it's taking the human-centered design process that creates things like the Instant Pot and the iPhone and other products that we just adore because they focused on who the people are at the center of that product, right? And they Yes. designed around them. I love doing that for people's lives. Like, let's get to know you and let's go through the human design process or human-centered design process with your life. What's interesting about it is that it also involves a testing and iteration phase, and that's hard for people because
yes,
what it
is.
Means for a number of reasons, right?
Yeah.
People get stuck on needing to feel like the decision they made or the path they went down was the quote unquote right one. Right. Like if you make a decision and then change your mind, all of a sudden your friends and family are going to be like, wait a minute. I thought you said you were doing XYZ and now you're doing something different. We like judge each other, right? Have you noticed that in working with people?
Absolutely. And you know what came up for me right now just organically was Dr. Michael Gervais. I'm sure you've heard of him in the sports psychology world.
Mm-hmm.
He said that anytime someone is wanting true presence, like actual mindfulness, which is really the crux of what you and I are discussing, it's being in the present moment without judgment. Now, let's just let that land for a moment. Can we be in the present moment without judgment? Can we be in the application and testing and iteration phase like you have in your lifestyle design? And can we go through that without judging ourselves, without ending up in the shame spiral that takes away from the application process itself? I mean, this is really the laser focus here. Shame and judgment is what blocks iteration and discovery.
It absolutely is. And so many times, what's really interesting is there's this phenomenon in psychology called the spotlight effect, where basically we walk around thinking and feeling like there's a spotlight on us, like everyone else is watching us and they're really watching our every move. And that's not really the case. And that shame and judgment that you mentioned, the feelings and the fear of it are very real. I mean, they are crippling for some people. But I don't think people realize that their idea of how much other people are watching them is so much bigger than the degree to which those people are actually watching you. Those people are so caught up in their own lives, but we're really good at creating these thoughts and creating these mindsets that convince us of something that isn't necessarily true.
Yeah, I can imagine how the spotlight effect might also be a mirror of imposter syndrome, because it seems to me like it operates from the same fear, scarcity, tension. I don't know if it's a somatic experience or if it's just a mental experience, but this spotlight effect, which, by the way, I haven't heard of. I love this. We're all thinking, oh, my gosh, people are watching me. I'm going to look stupid. I'm going to be found out in a way. And I think that when you look at imposter syndrome, that might be a close neighbor to this spotlight effect. It's fascinating.
Oh, very much so. I mean, you think about those, it goes back to those, you know, judgments and things that we were just talking about around we believe that we're going to be judged. We believe that other people are going to think less of us, you know, if somehow we don't perform perfectly. And that brings us right back to that testing process around, you know, saying, I'm going to try something out. I don't know if it's the right path for me. I don't know if it's optimal necessarily, but I'm going to try it. And I'm going to be okay with the fact that I might, quote unquote, fail or perform imperfectly. And that just needs to be okay, because there's no other way to grow, right?
Yeah. Well, this is emotional resilience. I mean, if resiliency is a factor in learning, to go back to nature analogies, and by the way, I love using nature analogies because you and I are nature. Yes, we're extremely intelligent. Mm. We have a frontal cortex and a limbic system, and we have a data processing faculty that's very smart. But you cannot deny, my friends, you cannot deny that we are a product of nature itself. And so when I look at what you're saying, this resiliency comes up for me, because look at a tree in nature. It bends, but it doesn't break. It's resilience. It flows with the wind and the stress. It follows the laws of nature. It drops its leaves. It grows its leaves. It follows certain, you know, undeniable laws. And I think the more we can lead our lives in this same vein of the undeniable laws of nature, I think the more we're going to see that nexus that you and I talked about in the beginning really come together for all people.
That's so true. That's absolutely true. And things that I think people don't allow themselves. I'm going to continue down that path of, you know, us being part of nature, us being animals at our core, right?
Yeah.
There are basic, number one, needs that animals have that we deny ourselves so much. Basic needs like sleep and rest. And we need to nurture ourselves in a number of different ways. That could be obviously food and water, but also we need close relationships. We need to nurture ourselves in this more holistic way. So a set of needs for sure, but then also a set of, say, operating mechanisms through which we go through life that just have evolved over time. We have to understand and cut ourselves some slack that we evolved just like other animals did. And because of that, some of these things that we run into in our day-to-day lives are simply because of that. They're not because we're weak. They're not because we can't, you know, handle the circumstances that we're in. They're because we're just human animal people, right?
Yeah.
And we have basic needs that need to be taken care of.
Yeah. And if those needs aren't honored and respected, there starts to be a fundamental breakdown of our enjoyment of life and just our ability to live life well. You know, if we're not having, whether you look at Maslow's hierarchy or you study Tony Robbins, you know, we could quote probably 20, 30 people here that talk about the human needs. But I feel like we're half beast and half spirit, April. You know, we're this physical body that needs eating, moving, sleeping, breathing. And we're also this soul that is here, and that soul needs thoughts and feelings and actions and connection to somewhat of a faith or a higher power. Now, I'm not talking about religion. What I'm talking about is just an honoring of the mystery that we're all here. We're all here together, and we're not exactly sure why. And these are the pieces that I think we really get to look at and just take a deep breath on, because, man, if we're not aware of these things and we're not consistently doing work to understand them, to integrate them, this is where disease and this is where the core of stress really comes from.
Mm, that's huge. And I'll throw one more piece onto that list, and that is something that I talk about a lot. So my regular listeners might be, oh, is she going to say it? Like rolling their eyes right now. But also an intense gratitude for the fact that we are here. You know, so much of what I talk about when I jump into the life design work that I do, and we've talked about it a bit so far, but is the fact that you can use your gratitude for the fact that you're here to help fuel you to make the next right move, right? Mm-hmm. If you have an intense gratitude for the fact that you have this life, right, with all of the opportunity that's in it, you have this life, you almost start to feel a sense of responsibility to live it well, because we can all point at family members, friends, other people who aren't here anymore and don't have this opportunity in front of us. And that gratitude, man, that's motivating for me.
Mm. You just made me take a pause there because I remember when I was interviewing Dave Asprey on the Wellness Force podcast, he was talking about the actual physiology, the biology, the neurokinetics of gratitude. And there's been multiple studies. Here we go, you know, in the siloed scientific world. You and I both know that gratitude feels good. We don't need a study for that. But we do have studies to back it up. And what science is showing is that when we instill, when we embody the most important thing, when we embody this gratitude, April, that's when the changes really start to happen. And you know, it's challenging for us, and the real work is to be grateful when we're in a moment of trigger, when we're in a moment of discomfort, when life is presenting us with this dark, deep contrast of lesson, where we're like, holy F, I don't want to deal with this right now. Let me take a deep breath. Let me reset my physiology. Let me touch the vagal nerve. Let me get into my body and out of my head, and let me go find the gratitude that's in my body right now.
It's huge. It's something that you can cultivate too. Have you noticed that? Like one of the challenges that we like to do within Peak Mind with our members is to have them do a daily gratitude. And I know, like, man, roll your eyes, right? That's all over Instagram. Everybody Sure. talks about it. But what's beautiful about the way that our minds work, and I'm going to go there, but there's so much more to it, as you just mentioned. The beautiful thing about the way that our minds work is our minds are powerful. They are not that sophisticated in this way, though. Your mind wants to do, like, wants to follow the pattern that you're giving it, right? And that pattern could be not focusing on gratitude. If that's the pattern you're in, that's what it's going to do most naturally. However, it takes intention for a few weeks, but if you intentionally refocus, ground yourself in the way that you're speaking about, and focus back on gratitude from an intentional way, your mind is not that sophisticated. It'll say, oh, okay, cool. This is what we do now. We go here now. This is our new pattern. And it'll start searching for it. Like, you'll notice it. The domino will flip. And one day you had to work to look for gratitude. And the next day you just notice it. Because your brain is saying, ugh, she's going to make me do this anyway. I might as well just be looking for it because I'm going to have to find it anyway. I might as well just, like, let's just cut to the chase. Let me find it. And the world is a more beautiful place when your mind is constantly searching for gratitude rather than you, I mean, not looking for it, or worse, focusing on things that are the opposite, are so negative and dark.
Yeah, we have this negativity bias that a lot of research has studied, and it came from a very ancient place. Because if you think about it, what you're describing, when we were being raised in tribes thousands and thousands of years ago, that really helped us because we needed to know if a tiger was going to eat us, if our children were safe, if we could hear something in the middle of the night that might cause danger. What that part of our brain, we get to honor that part of it. And I feel like so much attention is being poured into the negativity of how bad our reptilian brain is and how bad our ancient brain is. No, it's just, can we love it? And can we be aware that, like you said, it is simplistic? We can give it certain things. We can train it just like we do a bicep curl in the gym. You know, we can train the reptilian brain through conscious breathing, through journaling, through affirmation, through real tools. I mean, these are real powerful tools that almost become platitudes in life. You know, platitudes being these phrases that people throw out there, like love is all there is, and, you know, just trust yourself. The challenging thing is that platitudes are true, and the conscious breathing tools and all the things that I'm sure you have in your programs and I have in mine, it really comes down to, are you doing them? Are you being held accountable to do the things that you know that you're keeping promises to yourself that you know you want to do? That's where the real back and forth. That's where the pendulum of keeping your promise swings hard to, am I going to do it? Am I not going to do it? And I found that in my research and my work in my life, and just in general, for all these interviews and things that I go through, it's, are we loving ourselves enough to let go of making decisions that don't serve us? In other words, are we actually looking at the decision fatigue equation, and are we caring for ourselves? Are we eating good foods? Are we moving? Are we sleeping? Are we designing our life, you know, like you have in your programs? Are we designing our life to where we don't have to make so many decisions? Am I going to do it? Am I not going to do it? We just let go of making the decision, and we just keep the promise to ourselves by having a coach, having external framework for accountability as we go through healing and transformation.
something that I adore that you mentioned. I want to go to decision fatigue in just a moment, but I'm over here cheering. I'm like jumping up and down out of my chair. I'm so excited because something that you mentioned goes right back to, let's just cut ourselves a break and admit that we are animals at our core. We are human at our core. And that is you mentioning this negativity bias and how old of a motive it is, right? This evolved in our minds when it was very adaptive. We don't live in that world anymore. And so the awareness that, hey, our minds are just naturally inclined to keep us safe, naturally inclined to keep us alive. They gravitate naturally toward negative things. I think that's just a beautiful thing for people to be aware of because, and here's why, and I agree with you, don't treat this reptilian mind like it's this evil thing. It can either, it can be your biggest barrier if you let it. It doesn't have to be. And you get to decide what you feed that reptile, right? Are you, and one of the biggest things, like if you want to watch your mind change in a matter of weeks, if you are a person who watches a 24-hour news cycle, I'm not saying read the newspaper, I'm not saying maybe watch the evening news, whatever that happens to be. Reading especially is less valenced for people. But if you watch a 24-hour news cycle, it doesn't matter what channel, they're all the same in this regard. Negative news sells because people have a just tendency, as we mentioned, to gravitate there. And the more you're feeding that subconscious animal, right? The more you're feeding that reptilian brain, it believes you. Mm-hmm. It believes that the world is that negative and scary. If you want your mind to change within a matter of weeks, shut the 24-hour news cycle off and just watch it. Like your brain will open up. It'll like take a big exhale one of those days. And you'll see the world as a different place. It's incredible.
Well, we'll see the world how it actually is.
Right.
And that is that it's this mystery where look at the term mystery. Mystery does not mean it's always going to suck. Mystery does not mean it's always going to be bad. Mystery does not mean that every time you flick on a screen in big, bold, white, black, and red letters, you're going to see fear, unsafety, and trauma. I mean, that we're being literally programmed, like especially people that fall asleep to the television. You know, when we're in a theta state and we're about to fall asleep, if you have the news media on and you're being fed fear and scarcity and danger and murder and betrayal, I mean, these are all things that are getting seeded in your garden. The mind is a garden. So what seeds are you planting in there? Are you watching news media? Are you watching horror films? Are you watching violence? Are you scrolling Instagram and looking at all these terrible things that, yes, cause some kind of spike in noradrenaline and, yes, do activate your system? But at what cost? You know, at what cost are you using your body as a slave to these media outlets that really just earn money off of your currency of attention?
I love it. I love it so much. I do want to get to decision fatigue. We haven't covered that on the podcast, and it is sad because it's something that we all experience every single day. Most of us do.
I'm going to step off my soapbox there for a minute, but I really believe in what I told you. And I do want to talk about decision fatigue, but I really want people to let that sink in because I would say the number one thing you can do is cancel your cable subscription. Just do it. Like just that's if you're looking for, like you and I are talking about, how to get out of the negative loops and how to actually start to begin this process of designing your life, stop spending money, which is also your energy, and stop spending your energy, which is, you know, currency, that your attention is currency. Stop spending the currency and your energy on the things that are subconsciously programming you for fear. So I just wanted to let that sink in a little bit.
No, I love that. I love that because you can't stress it enough. I mean, and I'll belabor it for just one more moment because we're really hitting this and I think it's going to be very valuable for people. But you don't have to be the effect that you might be feeling if you're consuming a lot of media that's negative or consuming a lot of media that's not helpful. You won't necessarily feel negative, but there might just be added friction,
it might be more subtle.
A gray feeling that just lifts when you like let that go and when you remove that input.
It's so true because not all energy is on the surface, right? Like sometimes it's really easy to tell when somebody's sad or depressed or angry, but when it's a subtle seed that's growing, it's challenging to find where it came from. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times where it comes from is somebody else's belief or scarcity that isn't ours.
Right. Right. And, you know, too, you mentioned that, right? Our parents are training us in the way that they were trained and they didn't know any better. And society, you know, is
it's all a big cycle.
The biggest propagator all big of all of this. Right. Yeah. Right. And it just continues to keep going until, you know, someone decides to get intentional and start asking themselves the right questions.
And also,
why.
Also when Josh and April have this conscious, powerful conversation about it, mm-hmm. and then it ripples out to thousands of people, and then that ripples out. I mean, that's how change is created, right? By us having the courage to discuss it.
Absolutely. And two, you know, we talk about psychological strength and we're talking about, you know, well-being and wellness holistically. One of the biggest pieces of that, one of the biggest facets for people to start with is that notion of awareness. For you to realize that there is an issue or that the potential exists for something to be meaningfully better than it is now, that awareness is such an important first step and can be extremely difficult because we all run on so much autopilot that that awareness takes more intention than we typically would apply to our just normal, you know, rote day-to-day life.
Yeah. Know thyself.
Right.
You know, really, I mean, like it's, I think it's on a temple in ancient Greece. I forget who the philosopher was, but literally it's like the core of all knowing life, the core of all living life well, and just having a great experience here is to know thyself. I remember Gretchen Rubin brought that up in a conversation and, you know, she wrote her book about the four types, the tendency types, and all roads lead to just knowing thyself, like knowing who you actually are, which is a whole life discovery.
Absolutely. Okay. We promised decision fatigue and I have to get there because yes. Again, that's another one of those things. We're talking about these things that impact people daily. And that's another one. So give us a little deep dive into decision fatigue and how you think about it and how your work helps people avoid it a bit because wow, yeah. How powerful.
Right. Okay. So decision fatigue, it's this deteriorating quality of decisions made after long sessions of decision-making. I mean, that's the core of really what it is. It's a deteriorating quality of our faculty to decide what to do and why to do it. So here's a great example. Why do you think in the grocery store that candy and sweets and sugary snacks are placed right at the level where children's fingers can get to them? Mm. It's because behavioral psychologists studied the shopping habits of parents, and they realized that at 8 p.m., when Janet Smith is in the checkout line and she's exhausted, she's made 300 decisions that day, she's going to just give in to her child because her brain has all these toxins inside of it that need to be washed away. We only have so many decisions each day that we can make. I believe in Brendan Burchard's work, he explored that it was about 150 high tension decisions every single day. And this is why if you look at Steve Jobs or some of the great CEOs that have been out there, even Elon Musk, they tend to wear the same clothes every day because they don't want to decide what they're going to wear. They realize that in their businesses, and we're all running a business of life, if we make decisions about, am I going to drink water? Am I going to sleep well? Am I going to take a deep breath? Am I going to do my breath work? If I have to decide to do these things, it becomes one more decision that eventually stacks on the other side of the scale to where we become fatigued. And what happens when we're in decision fatigue is we get stressed out. We become a slave to the physiology that we're not honoring, you know, and this goes to a bigger lens as well, April. It's like really understanding that we live in a society that is built upon making people fatigued decisionally. Most media and most consumerism habits, we live in a world of weapons of mass distraction and consumerism that is based on scarcity and fear. You should buy this because you'll be sexy. You should own this because you'll be worthy. You should make this much money because then you'll be enough. It's all BS, but it's all based on the ivory towers that are now showing cracks that you and I are actually speaking against because we care about human beings. We care about how we treat each other, starting with ourselves. And decision fatigue, just being aware that we only have 150 decisions, what things self-care practices, self-love practices, wellness practices, can we stop making decisions about, and can we just relax into not making them a decision anymore? Because the stress of, am I going to do it? Am I not going to do it? Am I going to go to the thing? Am I going to wear this? Am I going to do that? Am I going to work out? The am I going to blank is really what makes us taxed physically, emotionally, and also we lose our connection to spirit when we're taxed physically and emotionally as well. So decision fatigue is huge, and I think just even knowing the concept is a great start for awareness.
I love that. That was such a great overview. And the am I going to, right, the way that another way that people frame that question is, should I? And the word should then becomes so valenced and so loaded, like, well, who's deciding what you should and shouldn't do, and whose judgment gets put on that should? And that becomes very loaded as well, adding to just the fatigue that you're experiencing on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I love that you brought up marketing in this. I love it. One of the examples I love giving when I tell people, so many of the symptoms that we all experience as a result of not building psychological strength, not focusing on our holistic well-being, one of the symptoms is that we believe that the level of stress and anxiety that we feel on a near constant basis is normal. We think that it's normal because it's happening to everyone. It happens all the time. It's a daily thing. And we believe that it's normal. And it is so normal that, think about, again, going back to cable TV, television shows and networks, HGTV on Sunday evenings. How do people feel on Sunday evenings, right? They're looking at their week ahead. There's that sense of dread. Imposter syndrome sets in. Mm-hmm. All of that gross, right? Everyone thinks that's normal. It doesn't have to be that way. But HGTV also knows that you're feeling that way. So what do they show? Island Hunters and Island Time and all of these vacation escapism shows, which are nice, right? They're beautiful and they're fun to watch and whatever. But what they're doing is marketing to the fact that you feel like garbage on Sunday night. So I would argue that people should take this seriously and be aware of it. Watch the Island show if you want to, but not because you feel like garbage and you need an escape, but because you just like nature and sometimes it's fun to look at it. But take care of that core root problem first, right? So that you're making the decision to watch that show intentionally, making the decision to eat that meal intentionally, or setting up a rubric so you don't have to make the decision at all.
Oh,
but
so
you're
good.
Doing it from a place of intention, not just autopilot because you feel like garbage.
God, this is like the universal human experience right here. Mm. And what I'm feeling is that if the, you mentioned intention a couple times, intentionality is like this powerful sword that cuts through all the BS of, can I allow myself to indulge and enjoy something, or am I indulging and enjoying because I'm escaping? Like, that's really what we're talking about here. Am I doing the thing, the TV, the food, the sex, the whatever, because I actually love it and I'm going to allow myself to enjoy it and be present to it in all of its richness? Or am I using the thing because I'm actually trying to cover over how I really feel with a thin veil? You know, am I using intentionality to do the thing that serves my soul, that makes me feel good, that gives me the richness of life? Or am I ignoring what I'm really feeling? And am I just using something to kind of quell what I'm really sensing? And I went through this as a child and as an adolescent. And, you know, I think we all go through phases of this, even as adults.
Absolutely. That question right there is a great challenge to people, right? Go through the major facets of your life and ask yourself which things you're likely doing because you're on autopilot or you're avoiding, and which things have you actively chosen in your life. And this is a great, you know, your episode, we're coming out right at the end of the year, right? This is a time when people just naturally reflect. I would argue you should do it all throughout the year, but whatever, if it causes you to reflect right now, lovely, do it.
Mm-hmm.
People reflect on the wholeness of their life and the meaning behind the things that they're doing. Take advantage of that and go ask yourself that question that Josh just mentioned. Like, are you doing this out of intention, or are you doing it out of avoidance or some other reason that doesn't allow you to more fully experience the thing that you're doing right at that moment? That would be, yeah. I mean, gosh, change your life in like a 2-hour session of sitting down and taking stock of things. That would absolutely do it.
Well, and this is why on our website and in multiple podcasts, I've just mentioned this thing. It's the most powerful thing. It's do this one thing. It's take an emotional inventory once a month, once a quarter. Emotional inventory is real simple. You take a piece of paper, you draw a line down the middle. On the left, you put 10 things that you love about your life, like 10 things you're most grateful for real, not faking it, like 10 things you actually love. On the right side of that line, put 10 things that are causing you the most pain. And you know, this is a private list for you. Pause, really reflect on what are the 10 things that I love that are making me grateful? What are the 10 things that are causing me pain and that really is causing me the most disease and distress? You'll know in your heart if they're true. And then take a breath and circle the one you're most grateful for. Then circle the one that's causing you the most pain. Maybe it's your job. Maybe it's a family member. Maybe it's a health practice or not keeping a promise to yourself. And then here's the big thing in the emotional inventory. Reach out to someone that you care about, that you trust, and tell them those two things. Like, hey, I'm about to go through a life change here, and I'm really looking for support. Can I share with you my process, this emotional inventory I took? Tell them what you're most grateful for. Tell them the one thing that's causing you the most pain, and then ask them for support and maybe ideas or just energetic support, a hug, or a you got this, so that you can actually change that one thing that's causing you the most pain. Because I think what happens is a lot of people, they have like 10 things that are causing them pain. And they're like, which one should I change first? Well, change the one that's causing you the most pain. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the one to go to, because all the other ones are going to get better once that, you know, existential load is lessened. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the one thing that everybody can do. It's a piece of paper with a line down the middle of it. Like, decide, my friends.
That's beautiful. And it's one of those things, so many of the action steps that we advocate, they sound so simple, right? I mean, that can't possibly be as powerful. That's so simple. If for something to be that powerful and life-changing, it must be difficult and really, you know, take a long time. I look at these psych strength exercises, and the one that you gave is so beautiful and elegant. I look at them like physical therapy. If you've ever gone to physical therapy, half the time you're sitting there and you're like moving the tiniest muscle barely at all. And you're like, is this doing anything? Are you kidding me? It is.
What's happening?
It is doing something. Mm-hmm. And that's what these are. You're zeroing in on one very critical process and you're working on it. It doesn't have to be hard. It doesn't have to take a long time. It doesn't have to be something that uproots, you know, your whole day. But these small practices make a huge impact if you do them. So do them, right? Like, do it.
And what's going to happen is you're going to transform. You're going to evolve. Just this week, I did a therapy session, probably cried for 3 minutes straight. It's part of the process, my friends. Like, we go through these layers and these new thresholds of growth. And you'll look back, if you just commit to doing that emotional inventory once a month, you'll look back in 6 months and be like, wow. Look at all I've accomplished from just keeping it simple. And honestly, reaching out for support, you know, friends, maybe a coach, a guide, just something to where we're actually doing the one thing. Because, man, 6 months can go by and you could be in the exact same place unless you're willing to be courageous. Mm-hmm. You know, you and I are having this courageous conversation. You know, the universe rewards bravery. The universe loves when we're courageous. But it's not going to be easy. It's simple. But it's not easy. And that's okay, because we're all doing it together.
Yeah. And that move that you make then, you know, you've got your piece of paper, you've got the line down it, you've done the whole exercise. And what you do about that area, and this, it's beautiful that this has come so full circle to the beginning of our conversation. We talked about the process of testing, right? Of iterating. Working on that big area that is causing you so much pain, the best way to do that is to start testing. Find something that would change that area. Test it. Did it work? Because you're recommending people go through the cyclical process once a month. That's a perfect time to put a test in place and check the next month or maybe 2 months down the road. Are we seeing movement in that area as a result of what I'm doing? If not, it's okay to adjust course. And it's, in fact, necessary for you to adjust course to continue working on that area. But I love that this has come full circle. It's just so beautiful.
Me too. I tend to go full circle because as just like it seems like you on your show and in your work, there's this element of wholeness that I get from you. And that's really what we're all doing is we're just waking up, remembering whatever kind of phrase you want to use, that we're whole right now. Like nobody's broken. Yes, we're all healing. And that's cool because I think we're here to heal and learn consistently. But a friend of mine actually just launched a podcast. It's called Wholeness. And I was walking on the beach and we came up with this name for her because she kept going back and forth, you know, what marketing approach should I use? What language should I use? What's going to get the most SEO? And I was like, what do you really want? And she's like, I just want to remind people that they're whole. And that's really what we're all doing is we're just doing our work to remind ourselves that we're whole. And that wholeness is what God, spirit, intelligence, whoever you want to believe in, faith of something, brought us here to learn is that we're already whole and we're consistently reminding ourselves through adversity and challenge and all these different things that we're whole right now. You know, it's easy when all of the resources are taken care of and life isn't stressful to feel whole. It's when our wholeness gets challenged is when we're broke, we're hurt, we're triggered, we're angry. Like that's when the wholeness and our learning and appreciation of wholeness becomes the most powerful.
So gorgeous. As we're wrapping up today, I'm wondering if you can give us a definition for how you think about someone who's psychologically strong. And this, you know, can be in the lens of the work that you do. I've asked so many people this question, what does it mean to be psychologically strong? And what's cool about people coming from the lens of the work that they do is that psych strength really is a very broad set of topics. And so it's been fun to ask a lot of different people this because you start to see the nuance in what it means to become a very resilient, strong person. So thinking about the work that you do, thinking about your background, I would love for you to tell us what it means to you to be psychologically strong.
Okay. Such a great question. How much time do we have?
I know, right?
So psychological strength. Honoring the fact that we're half beast and half spirit and to be psychologically strong means really that we are resilient because strength is great, but if we're strong and we don't have a base, we don't have roots, then we don't have resilience. Going back to that analogy of the tree, if we have emotional resilience, it means we have the strength to bend to life stressors, to bend to adversity without snapping, without breaking. And how we have this resilience and our ability to not break is to do our work to grow the roots. The roots of emotional intelligence, the roots of physical intelligence and spiritual intelligence. And of course, way down in there, in the humus, in the bedrock, deep in the soil, is our connection to this commitment to gather, to apply and test, and then to embody. You know, those roots run deep for all of us. And the more that we're feeding those roots, the right types of fuel and water and sun and gratitude, and love and rolling with the whole thing and kind of laughing along the way and being like, wow, this thing's a big mystery with a smile. That's psychological strength.
That's beautiful. This has just been a phenomenal conversation. We have covered more of the really hard-hitting impacts people on a daily basis, valuable, changeable topics that than almost any other interview that I've ever had. So I appreciate you bringing this background of yours that is so robust. I keep using that word, but this robust background of yours to this audience to help us think about how we can live better in our daily lives through some of these practices that you've talked about and shared in this episode. So thank you so much for being here. This has just been wonderful.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I love where we went. And if anybody's like triggered by what I said, reach out to me.
Well, and let's go there. What I didn't ask you, I just got all excited because we landed in such a beautiful place. But
yes,
People are going to want to know where to find more about you. Talk about your podcast. Tell us where we can find you because your work is so holistic and takes such a great approach.
Well, thank you because, man, it's been the 17-year discovery since I was really in the worst place in my life. And it came from that contrast. And I've shared everything that I learn on the Wellness Force podcast. It's where we do explore this. How do we help humans heal? You know, how do we give each other this physical and emotional intelligence so that we can heal? We have a really big focus on mental health in 2020, starting with organic superfoods and breath work and wellness life design programs like yourself, like people that are actually doing the work and that are committed to it. It's at wellnessforce.com/M21. That's the best place to start. You can get to know me. You can sample our best podcast content. It's wellnessforce.com/M21. It's a really powerful guide. It's my gift to your audience and my gift to anyone that ever hears this 10 years from now. Somebody could hear this. It's still going to apply, my friend. So, you know, that's your gift.
That's wonderful. Thank you again. I mean, truly, your wealth of background is it's just amazing. And the fact that you're willing to give so much, both during this episode with tangible hands-on things that people can do, and then also this resource is just fantastic. So thank you so much, Josh, for being here.
April, deep bow. Thank you.
It's a simple fact that nearly everyone in the world could benefit from building psychological strength. But not everyone will put in the time and effort to do so, but today you did. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Building Psychological Strength. Now, if you're interested in building the mental toughness, confidence, and resilience you need to thrive through life's ups and downs, visit us at www.peakmindpsychology.com. Also, if there's someone in your life who could benefit from this episode, please share it with them. And if you yourself found this episode valuable, meaning if you took away even one insight that you can use to build psychological strength in your own life, we would so appreciate it if you would drop us a rating and a review on iTunes. The thing is, the more ratings and reviews we have, the easier it is to get this powerful and important content out to the people who need to hear it. Remember, your mind can be your most valuable asset or your biggest liability, and you get to choose. So choose wisely, my friend, and I'll see you next time on Building Psychological Strength.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.